It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. For years, local, state, and federal officials have said the Pittsburgh area has been plagued by stormwater overflows, which have led to sewage overflows. Now the Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority is releasing a request for proposals to develop a stormwater management master plan for Pittsburgh. Will Pickering is the executive director of PWSA. Will, welcome back to the Confluence.
Great to be with you, Kevin.
Will, the problem is centered around our old infrastructure, particularly the combined sewer systems. Remind us why that is a particular issue.
You know, a lot of the problems that we're seeing are thanks to the sewer system that was designed in the late 1800s and built in the early 1900s. And our sewer system functions quite well during a heavy rain event. The water that falls on streets, on roofs, is taken into one pipe. Then that pipe actually shares sewer flow. And that flow is directed during a wet weather event to the river when the wastewater treatment plant at Alcosan cannot handle it. So the alternative is that if Alcosan can't handle it, it's either going backward up into basements, toilets, back up into streets, or it goes to the river. So it functions in terms of moving the water, but we obviously know that we do not want an instance where that combined stormwater and sewage is flowing untreated into our waterways here in Pittsburgh. It goes into streams, it goes into all three rivers. And, you know, the system is not unique to Pittsburgh. Many older cities have these combined sewer systems and are wrestling with the same problems that we have.
This management plan that you want to develop, this would be separate from Alcosan's plan to reduce sewage overflows in its system, correct?
That's right. Alcosan has engaged into a consent decree with the EPA and the Department of Justice to focus on their responsibilities with respect to combined sewer overflows. And they have separate obligations. We have our own outfalls into the river that we are responsible for from a regulator perspective. And we also have some other considerations on a neighborhood basis.
Mm-hmm. So what are you looking for in general from a stormwater management strategy?
We recognize that there are components of what we call gray infrastructure, pipe infrastructure, that are required with a lot of these projects. But we have seen through other cities that you can engineer green infrastructure solutions. You know, it may not work in every instance, but we do want to emphasize that we want to build that when it's possible, when it's cost effective, and when it's effective to manage the stormwater, because it provides additional community benefit. It can be aesthetically pleasing. It can, you know, create natural habitats. It can also serve a dual purpose, perhaps be a park space within a neighborhood. So, you know, we prioritize green. We know that it might be a combination of both, and we're really looking for creative ideas. We really think that Pittsburgh has a, you know, topography is a unique challenge, but it also can present a unique opportunity for us to be able to adapt some of these solutions that have been used other places and make those investments here to be able to slow, store, capture stormwater in a way where it isn't just buried beneath the street and forgotten about, that it can provide these additional benefits to our residents.
Of course, green solutions, that's using vegetation, soil, basically nature to help do the work, right?
That's absolutely right. So it's not just simply tree planting. I don't want to give that impression. These are systems that are designed by engineering firms, and they're well thought out, and we're able to monitor the flow within them to make sure that they're effective. And we're right now with our demonstration projects, we're taking samples of water flow before construction and after to make sure that everything that we are putting forward is actually effective in slowing the flow of that water and capturing that stormwater and preventing it from entering our sewers.
So recently, in the last couple of years, everything we've heard about mostly from PWSA has to do with replacing lead lines. So how do you balance two major projects, replacing the lead lines, our water to our homes, our businesses, and this major stormwater management plan?
I think that's the maybe multi-billion dollar question, Kevin, and it's one there isn't a simple answer for, but you're absolutely right. In recent history at PWSA, our primary focus has been addressing lead in water, replacing lead lines, and also getting the drinking water system stable to a point where we feel that we can provide reliable water for the next 100 years to our customers. And those projects are beginning now. They're in the design phase, and we're entering construction on a lot of activity on the drinking water side. And that's one of the reasons we feel comfortable to be able to make the pivot, start thinking about these combined sewer overflow issues that we've been discussing now for decades as a region. Funding will be a challenge. We recognize we're asking a lot from our ratepayers to fund the drinking water activities. All of our rates are approved by the Public Utility Commission, so they would certainly weigh in on a potential stormwater fee, which would be based on the amount of hard surface on each property, because we think that that's a better way to get revenue for these kinds of projects versus just how much drinking water you use, mm-hmm. which is what we're doing now.
Quickly, do you have a cost estimate at this point?
Don't want to put a number on it quite yet, but it is going to be a sizable investment. And it's something that a lot of other cities, Philadelphia, just here in the Commonwealth, it's a multiple hundreds of millions of dollars investment in their stormwater program. And these are things that can be financed over 30 or even longer periods of time. So it's not as if the price tag is going to hit next year. It's something that can be financed and billed appropriately.
Will Pickering is the executive director of the Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority. Thanks, Will.
Pleasure to be here, Kevin.
It's the Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Is it safe for me to cast my ballot at a polling place? Will my mail-in ballot arrive on time and my vote actually be counted? Will there be trouble in the streets if some people don't like the election results? All this can make for a stressful time. Travis Shermer is an associate professor of professional counseling at Carlo University. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on.
What are you hearing from other counselors, your colleagues? Are people feeling anxious right now?
You know, I think people are feeling anxious, and those are the conversations that I've been a part of. But we're talking a lot about how do we protect ourselves from that stress, and how do we ensure that we are putting our well-being as a priority.
The pandemic, is that compounding the stress? You know, we're concerned about our health, we're concerned about our families, and also we have a vested interest in the election.
You know, our bodies don't distinguish or compartmentalize stressors. Physiologically, we're reacting to these, and so there is a cumulative kind of compounding effect that can occur.
Even if you're dealing with one of those that you just mentioned, the others might be affecting you as well. Maybe you somehow can address the one or not think about it as much, but then you have other factors stressing you?
That's an important point, is that there are a lot of things going on right now. So in thinking about how we protect ourselves, there is a piece of this that's about looking inward right now at a time where we're so much outside of us is trying to grab our attention. It's also important that we tend to those inner spaces, to what's going on inside of us as well as within our kind of inner circle, our inner communities, where we can be more kind of safe and vulnerable.
Now, for people who might be feeling acute anxiety, how do you recommend they deal with today? They deal with election day.
You know, our expectation is that there will be a heightened level of stress. And I think the media has done a really nice job, at least depending upon the outlets that we're accessing, about talking about how this election's going to be different, that election results are going to be different, that we're not going to know the same day. And so there is a piece of kind of doing what we can, so putting our vote out there, ensuring that we're doing our best to have it count, you know, whether we're showing up to the polls or, you know, we got our mail-in ballot in, and then letting go. You know, we talk about things like radical acceptance, or acceptance in general, that we're saying, all right, this is a process that kind of goes beyond what I can control. And when we do that, when we shifting to focusing on, you know, our day, our activities, those in our community, those we love, and reflective of the conversations that I'm having with people in my life, you know, in both professional and personal settings, we're talking about, you know, when do we shut off the news? Mm-hmm. And no offense to WESA, but at some point in time, turning that off to say, you know, no more news is going to be helpful for my well-being.
How difficult is that to let go?
It can be very challenging. You know, I think about our cell phones, for example, our smartphones, our computers. They're almost like Skinner boxes in the sense that they are constantly reinforcing us to scroll more, to look more. Letting go of that stimulus, letting go of that interest and that excitement can be challenging. Mm-hmm. And there's also a competitive piece to this. It's one side versus the other. We want to win. And so there's something that's very reinforcing about hearing news that is supporting that. And there's also something very activating. So we need to think about, how do we reinforce other behaviors? So engaging in things that we like to do that are already reinforcing in order to kind of pull us away from that.
If someone is sort of trapped in that cycle of scrolling through negative news, doom scrolling, what are some of the changes in their body that might signal what they are doing is bad for them?
So we might notice that in terms of becoming excited by having, you know, heart palpitations, like we get more increased heart rate, shortness of breath, things like that. But there are also some indicators kind of in our environment that if we notice that time is passing and we haven't noticed or attended to what information is being presented to us, that we're just kind of mindlessly scrolling through things, losing that period of time can be a nice indication that maybe nothing new is coming from this and it's time to step away. There can be strategies that people can use when checking Instagram. I only let myself do that for 5 minutes to make sure that I'm not spending too much time there.
Do you have a plan for Election Day?
I do. I was actually, my father and I were talking about this the other day. We agreed we're turning off the news for the week and we won't turn it back on until Friday. And that for him is a big concession. I enjoy playing the drums, so I'm definitely going to get some practice in that day and spend some time with my spouse in the evening watching some of our favorite shows together.
I've had friends who said they went out and voted and then they just disconnected. They went for bike rides. They went for long walks on the trails. So if someone wanted to make a plan for Election Day to manage anxiety, where would they start?
So I think that your friends had a good plan in place in terms of looking for those already reinforcing, already enjoyable activities. When we're working with people who have depression or anxiety, oftentimes we look at starting with things that they already enjoy doing in order to boost or improve their mood. And so when thinking about a plan for Election Day, identifying things that are already working for you, already things that you enjoy that feel good, and making sure that those are in your life. You know, it could be connecting with people that you love and care for, people that boost your mood, as well as, you know, engaging with activities that you love. You know, you mentioned bike riding before, going for walks, watching your favorite television shows or movies, playing music. All of these things are opportunities for us to engage in things that we already find enjoyable. And so we kind of have a wellness plan in our lives already. It's just a matter of identifying what those things are that are already working and then bringing them out at times of distress.
Travis Shermer is an associate professor of professional counseling at Carlo University. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me this morning.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. There are more than 900,000 registered voters in Allegheny County, and despite the pandemic, many will make their way to the polls tomorrow. The county's top public health official has assured people that it's safe to vote in person, but any activity outside the home incurs some level of risk from the coronavirus. 90.5 WESA's Sarah Bowden reports on how to stay safe while performing your civic duty.
Poll worker Paul Descani will be spending Election Day at St. Rosalia's, a nearly 100-year-old Catholic church in Pittsburgh's Greenfield neighborhood. He decided to volunteer this year because of COVID-19.
Historically, many poll workers are seniors, and given the pandemic, some of them at least stayed home or didn't want to go do this year. I figured, well, I'm young and able, so I should.
Any exposure risks people face while voting at St. Rosalia's will likely be far greater for the 31-year-old Descani, who will be spending 14 hours inside the polling station.
I've studied, you know, the data, and my age and risk group, it's very low. If I get it, I'm probably going to be fine.
Not everyone is in their early 30s and healthy, but that doesn't mean people should forfeit their constitutional right to vote. University of Pittsburgh microbiologist Seema Lakdawala is an expert in the transmission of influenza viruses.
I think that it's really important to consider the space in which people are voting.
Lakdawala says it's hard to know how safe it is to vote in person because different spaces pose different levels of risk with the coronavirus.
Is it in an old building that probably has poor ventilation? How long will you be in that space? How many other people are going to be in that space at a given time?
Scientists don't know how environmental factors affect how long the virus remains viable. This makes it hard to calculate risk. Lakdawala recommends wearing additional protection while voting.
Maybe having a secondary barrier, like a face shield on top of that mask, or some sort of eye protection, in case there are individuals who are also voting who are not wearing masks.
She says wearing two cloth masks is also an option. County officials suggest bringing your own black or blue pen and to vote as quickly as possible. County Executive Rich Fitzgerald.
Go in, cast your ballot, and go. And there are times of the day in which you'll be able to go, which won't be as busy.
Fitzgerald says there's usually a rush before 9 a.m. and then a lull before things get busy around 5:30 or 6 in the evening.
So if you could go in the middle of the day at 10 in the morning or 2 in the afternoon, but you know, going into a polling place, you know, is it any different than going into a grocery store or a gym or any other facility, an office?
And of course, stay at least 6 feet away from others. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, and wear a well-fitting mask. At this point, most people can probably recite these precautions in their sleep. County officials say if everyone follows these simple instructions, Election Day will be safe.
We'll also provide face shields and floor markings to encourage social distance while people are queued up in line.
Jerry Tiskevich is the county's head of administrative services.
Gloves, some hand sanitizers, and also some hand sprays to disinfect some of the voting areas after each voter.
While touring Allegheny County's elections warehouse where ballots are stored, Tiskevich and I talk in front of the machines that will tabulate votes on Tuesday. I ask what the plan is for people who insist on voting without a mask. Choosing to not wear a face covering puts everyone at risk. But unlike grocery stores or office buildings, people won't be denied access to the polls.
We'll also provide masks for any voter who may have forgotten to wear one or does not want to wear one. We could at least offer them if they would like to wear one.
Again, no voter can be forced to wear a mask. Tiskevich isn't too worried, though. During the 3 weekends of early voting, which saw high participation, he says he encountered just one person who showed up without a mask.
And they just outright forgot. They forgot that they needed a mask.
So they gave him one. Then that person cast their ballot and left. I'm Sarah Bowden, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. If you enjoy what you're hearing, there's even more to read on our website at WESA.fm, where our newsroom is rounding up everything you need to know about how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting our region and beyond. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at WESA.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Julia Zenkovich, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.